All right, and we're back for another week on the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar, we're here, and we are really excited about a great show tonight. Jay, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good. You used to like,
it's not
like
morning
this,
yet.
This early morning time slot? You're
it's
okay
not
with
morning.
That?
It's not morning yet.
No, it's not?
Technically, it's not.
Well, I don't know when you're listening to it.
For me, you know what? For me, that... For me, it actually is. No, it's midday for me right now.
All so. Right. All right. So yeah. We'll go grab some lunch after this is over.
Excellent.
Maybe go.
I'm always down for lunch.
Go for a walk on the sunny mountain.
Are
or
we
going
to
like
hold
that.
Hands?
Only if you ask nice.
Mm-hmm.
Shucks.
Okay.
What's going on, man? How was your week?
It was very good.
Good.
Very, very good.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
No, it was nice and busy. As long as I'm keeping busy, my brain is working properly.
The last time that we spoke... I believe you were sitting right there, and I was sitting right here.
As per usual, yes.
And the mayor of Montreal had just resigned.
Yes.
And we knew that the mayor of Laval was well on its way, and you had a wisp
of... It was only a matter of time.
Like a wisp of nostalgia to you. You seemed a little bit down about it.
And
like your childhood was suddenly...
Why would I be down about it? I was happy. Who cares? Talk about a guy who's... Imagine, this guy was in power when I was a kid.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Think about that. You know, so good riddance. See you later, buddy.
It's a long time to run a town.
Yeah, right? Go with Trombley and do whatever you guys do somewhere else.
Do you think he's Mayor Quimby or something? What's going on?
Except he got caught. That's the difference. That's the only difference. In way too long. Too long. Too much power. Long.
We also had a major U.S. election in the last week, which I think we very calmly and coolly set up on last week's Kaufman Show. We knew that there was very little to be concerned about. And, you know, again, I'm only talking about this for you, Jay, because I know how passionate and excited you are about U.S. politics.
Yes, I love it.
I know. I can tell. I see
I love
it.
I don't think it's all crap at all.
The way that they get all glassy when I start to talk about it and you start to try and look at other things in the room, I can just tell.
Because, you know what, for me, every 4 years, it's the same thing for me over and over and over again. Everybody tries to act like it's something different happening. It's not. It's the same thing. It always will be the same. And, I mean, it changed a little bit maybe about 4 years ago. But you know what? I noticed
a little
this...
bit.
Yeah, okay. You know, I mean, it just wasn't, I don't know. It's just the same thing for me every time.
Well, we'll get into that.
It's getting boring.
We'll get into that in about a half
Again.
An hour's time with Dave Zirin, Edge of Sports.
Yes, that will be interesting.
A very busy show for you guys tonight. In about 15 minutes' time, we will speak with Steve Berthume, who is, without a word of a lie, somebody that I've been trying to get on our show since this show started. Steve was the host of ESPN's Baseball Tonight, and he was the biggest free agent signing of the offseason so far, took a job as the new play-by-play man with Bob Brenly in Arizona. So he'll be working D-backs games all next year. ESPN's loss is, I guess, the gain of the people of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We don't really get ESPN here. I only get to see him on the highlights on ESPN.com. So with my MLB.TV subscription, I'll be listening to a lot of Steve Berthume this year. Berthume, by the way, if he was from here, would be pronounced very differently. It would be like the former NHL goaltender.
Berthune.
Yeah, that would be closer. Not like Norman Berthune.
No.
Like
there's an R in there, right?
It's Berthiaume.
Berthiaume.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
I thought it was Berthune.
We will also be joined by baseball writer Jeff Baker, who many of you Montrealers might remember from his time at the Gazette in the 90s. And Jeff was in studio with us about a year ago. And always nice of Jeff to give us the time when he's in town. He's a Montreal boy who lives out on the West Coast. He's the president of the Baseball Writers Association of America chapter in Seattle and had a vote for the American League Rookie of the Year, which was released today. Shock, shock, Mike Trout in a landslide, 28 unanimous votes.
Hmm.
We're going to talk hoops with Max Kerman from Arkells. Lots going on in the NBA. We've got this whole cluster something. I think it's called a cluster something.
Right.
In Los Angeles right now with... Phil Jackson being approached to coach the team, but then not being given the offer. And he responded today. So we'll get into that with Max. And this Thursday, we've got hip-hop karaoke at the Belmont, a Montreal institution, now being run by Olivia Benaroche, and Liv will be in studio to give us the details on that. So we've got ourselves a full show tonight.
We do.
And,
we do.
I'm quite looking forward to it.
The you know what? There was something different about this election.
Tell me.
If I may.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you follow my Twitter handle, at JPub Radio.
That's right. It's
you'll know that I tweeted that a good chunk of the people that voted for Romney believe the Earth is 5,000 years old. A good chunk of the people that voted for Obama did it because MTV told them to.
Which is the lesser of the two evils, Jay?
I'll go with the MTV generation any day.
I want my MTV, man.
Any day.
You know, MTV doesn't play music videos anymore.
No, they don't.
So at least they stand for something good right now.
Yeah, they play unreal reality shows. That's what they play.
Yeah, I don't think it was like Snooki says vote for Obama. I think it'd be more like MTV had a sit down with the president.
Right.
Anyways, lots of other things happened. The first openly gay person was elected to the Senate. There was, I think, the first openly bisexual woman was nominated to Congress in Arizona. That recount just happened today. You can pretty much smoke weed in Colorado now. So when John in Denver calls, there's not even any questions anymore.
Are you a fan of that terminology, openly?
Openly?
Yeah, I can't stand that.
Openly gay?
Openly gay.
To be honest with you, I've never given it a moment's thought.
Yeah. It's something that George Carlin touched on once. It's very funny terminology when you think about it. Openly gay. Well, he's gay.
Sure, sure.
You know, he's gay. The fact that he says that he is doesn't really make a difference that he is. Yeah. This is the kind of things I think about. Anyway, openly, I mean, he's openly. I mean, you can't be.
You know, there's no opposite to it, right? Like, he's. Well,
yeah, you can't be openly black.
No, but somebody can be.
Unless you're James Brown.
Somebody
you know?
Can be closeted, I guess, right?
Closeted, yeah, I guess. Closeted.
But then you wouldn't say closeted gay.
Yeah, a closeted gay. No, that gets a little weird, I guess.
Well, yeah, that would be like outing somebody.
Yeah, openly gay. I just think we should just say gay.
Okay.
And bisexual.
From now on, we will.
Openly bothers me for some reason. I'm not attacking you personally.
Well, no,
just,
but I think.
It's a terminology that's used, and it just doesn't really make any sense to me.
You know what it is, Jay? It's the, I am implying when I say it that in the course of history, there has to have been other gay
senators.
Oh, absolutely.
10% of them.
So this is the first time that a senator openly admitted.
Right.
Before, during, while campaigning, because you know what? Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in Minnesota, people don't care. Maybe
and that's a good thing.
South of the Mason-Dixon people
And that's
do.
A good thing. But if we say that it was the first gay senator, that's true. It would be inaccurate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would be, because at one point in history, it has to have happened at one point.
Right.
But I don't until know, it's they just openly gay, you know, means
until,
that, yeah.
until they dig up the bones of Strom Thurmond and out them, I feel like this is the first openly
Maybe
gay.
Maybe they'll do it themselves, and then they'll be openly gay bones.
So we had our. We're going to just shift topics right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, what am
an
I talking
interesting
about?
Opening, AJ?
Yeah, it always is.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Oh, nice to see you, too.
I hope you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, that we do not script this show.
No, we don't. That much is clear.
We have a vague plan of where we want to go and things we want to talk about with our guests, but there are no written questions. There are no tete-a-tetes beforehand. Jay comes in blind, not knowing what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, what music is playing. And sometimes
and I don't
we
judge
end
it.
Up having conversations about the merits of calling somebody gay versus openly gay.
There you go.
Hey, it's the Kaufman
That's
Show.
That's what the Kaufman Show
if
is all about.
You can play, you can play. Jimmy G on the board with us tonight. Good evening, sir.
Gentlemen, how are you?
We are fantastic. We are. We're missing John Kakalakis.
Where is he?
He's in Cuba.
Cuba.
Cuba. Yes. The one place we have not tried to call during our show.
Guy's got a rough life, huh? Cuba.
We pay our interns very well here at the Kaufman
yeah.
Show. I, in fact, insisted that he returns with a bottle of Havana Club for me, or he doesn't get into the studio next week.
Well,
costs like $7. Come on.
Yeah, there's a reason why it costs $7. Believe me.
Yeah, but if you wanted to buy it here, it would be how much? $35, $40?
No, not that much. It's about a $30 bottle.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was off by $5. Shoot me.
Okay. You were openly wrong there, my friend.
Bravo, Mr. Ferrer.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you. That's why they pay me the big bucks.
That's right.
Maybe I'll go to Cuba next week.
Go.
Wish I could.
Go. Have fun, man.
Wish I could.
Have fun. I know Max Kerman's looking for somebody to go on vacation with.
Okay.
So maybe you can head off to Cuba.
Okay.
Cuba Libre.
Okay.
I went to a ball game in Cuba once. One of the most fun baseball games I've ever been to in my life.
They really get into it, don't
the
they?
The atmosphere was like a U.S. college football game. It was fantastic.
Yeah. I would love to take in a baseball game in that part of the world.
Yeah, it's definitely a must-see. And I was hoping if the NHL continues to be stupid. And I think we're just at that point right now. Well, the NHL is being very, very stupid.
We're way past that point.
I'd like to see some of the sports networks pick up some of the winter ball games. And I know I'm just a nut.
Are you kidding?
Vladimir Guerrero is playing for the Lycee Tigers in the Dominican League right now.
Are you kidding? They need to show you the World Series of Poker that happened three years ago.
Oh, bring it on.
That's what you're going to see.
Show me the river, baby.
Yeah. God. Poker. God. Don't get me started on poker.
What?
Nothing.
No, please. This is all. I love.
Poker, you know, is the worst.
Poking the bear.
Poker is the worst example of a game there is. It's the worst. Basically, it's a game made for you to strategically
lie. Hey, all right.
Lie in order to steal the other person's money. There's absolutely no ethic in this game. There's nothing good that comes out of this game. And the worst part of it is these guys that come in here, it's developed this kind of culture where these guys think they're in the Old West. I mean, a lot of them actually do wear cowboy hats. A lot of them wearing sunglasses and their hoodies, as if that's going to make any kind of difference with your opponent. You know, I always thought of it as a game that's played by old people and people bored at work. That's what poker is for me. What a colossal waste of time,
Jay,
and energy.
It's the perfect game to represent our world of capitalism.
Yes, it is.
It really is.
It is. It fits Screw in with, the other guy with, out of his money by lying to
it
him.
It fits in with J.R. Moringer's Sutton. It fits in with Bruce Springsteen's Wrecking Ball.
It's perfect.
It fits in with Mitt Romney's 47%.
Yeah. And you know what? It's perfect. Where that game was developed and mostly mastered is a place called Las Vegas, which could also be known as the as hell, as we might call it. The worst city ever devised by humankind. I went there once. I will never go back.
You know, there are a lot of mobsters who disagree with you, Jay.
Well, yeah, no, they're doing well for themselves, I'm sure.
This is the Kaufman Show. Let's go down a little plasket, foreshadowing the end of the night.
Poker. On the highway, and her eyes said, going my way. And I loved her in an instant, like a Turkish cymbal crashing. Got high, got higher. Was it smoke or true desire? That I wobbled in my walk and I'm trembling. That's right, you got me shaking. When you take me in your arms to talk romance, my heart starts doing that St. Rita dance and I'm dancing.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Coming in on a little Jack White. I'm sure you all heard a lot of that song during the playoffs. It was that or Springsteen's Land of Hope and Dreams constantly on TBS. All right, time for our next guest. As I was saying in the intro before, this is a gentleman that I have been wanting to talk to since this show started, and I'm really happy that we finally got a chance to speak with him. He used to be the host of ESPN's Baseball Tonight, and as of right now, he's still the number one free agent signing of the offseason, now the play-by-play man with Bob Brenly for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Welcome to the Kaufman Show, Steve Berthume. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Dave. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to speak to an American who's so well-versed on the CFL, too, I have to say. You know more than me, man.
Well, I picked up a strange affection for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I'm not quite sure how, but I just sort of started following them on the CFL's website, which is actually a terrific website. If you want to update yourself on what's been going on in the league, they have great video availability, and you can go through news and pictures and see clips of games, and I sort of fell into it, and I like the way the Rider Nation shows their rider pride and supports the team, and I kind of got into the history of it a little bit, and they took one on the chin yesterday, but after a couple of tough Grey Cup losses last few years, so I'm a sort of a weird rider guy. I think they're a neat team.
Well, it's because of you, I guess, that back in the day they would show some highlights, Grey Cup highlights on CNN Sports, right?
Back in the day. Well, I like watching it. I think it's a great brand of football. I think they have a great thing going on there, and I think they market the league well, and this is our game and that whole campaign. And I admit I watch it. I'm a rider man. I think it's a fun league.
It's uniquely Canadian, and yeah, like you said, they embrace it. And I don't think there's any other way to go up against the behemoth that is the NFL.
Well, I find it. I mean, this is the 100th Grey Cup, as everybody knows. 100 Grey Cups. That's twice as many Super Bowls as they've had. And I have a fascination for old sports history like that, and I think the league has a great history. And one of the guys that works on our show, Baseball Tonight, Jim McKean, who, of course, was a Major League umpire for almost 25 years.
And a Montrealer as well.
Yeah, he used to be Ron Lancaster's backup with the Riders, a backup quarterback. And, I talked to him about the old days. It's really fun.
In conversation with Steve Rathume, now with the Arizona Diamondbacks, I was so close to saying from ESPN, but not anymore.
Yeah, that's right. I've just actually got back last night from a week in Arizona, do my first week on Diamondback duty. So, yeah, I'm excited. We're getting ready to move from Connecticut out to Arizona, and my wife and I are just thrilled with the opportunity. It's a good change for both of us, and we're really looking forward to it. It's a dream come true for me, go to the ballpark every day and work for a major league team, and the Diamondbacks have been great in giving me this opportunity, and I'm just thrilled to be a part of the organization.
And you got to stick up for Wade Miley today after he came in second in the Rookie of the Year voting.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was silly that it was one guy left him off the ballot entirely, a gentleman from San Diego who put Yonder Alonso in there as his third-place vote instead of Wade Miley. And I mean, when you're a rookie pitcher and you lead all major league rookie pitchers in, what, innings, ERA, and whip, and you're not a top-three rookie, something's wrong. And so I thought that was curious, to say the least. But the voting was really close. 16 to 12 first-place votes for Bryce Harper over Wade Miley, and it was only 7 points or so. So it was a real close vote.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with Bryce Harper being NL Rookie of the Year. I do have an issue with him not being in the top three in somebody's ballot, but everybody's entitled to their vote.
Well, this is something that's interesting now. The BBWAA has really opened up. There's a lot more transparency, and because of this, we get to know exactly who is voting how. And obviously there's good sides to that, but there's also people are going to come under a lot more scrutiny, which could lead to people voting along a party line and not, you know, voting with their heart, with their heads necessarily, but voting with their hearts.
Yeah, I guess. I think if writers are going to vote for these awards, and that's fine, there should be some accountability. And I think if you don't believe in your vote strong enough to stand up for it, then that probably tells you what you really think.
Hmm.
And I'm not a voter. I don't vote for the awards. I never have. But if your conviction is not strong enough to stand up for your vote, you shouldn't have the vote.
Do you think they'll ever open up the voting to broadcasters as well as writers?
Oh, man, I don't know. I doubt it. I don't think you should, because it's tough, because if you're doing, and I've, of course, this is my first, getting ready to start my first year with the Diamondbacks, so I haven't done it yet. But if you're watching one team every night for 162 games, you don't get to see a whole lot of the other teams. It's kind of like college football coaches voting in the polls, which is
right.
Silly because they see their own team and they see the teams in their conference. Perhaps they might see some film, but a coach in Oregon has no idea what's going on with a team in South Carolina. And so how could he be qualified to vote on that? He can't, even though he's, of course, a head football coach. He knows what he's doing. He just hasn't seen the other team. And I think that's probably true for the broadcasters. If you're doing one game or one team all the time, it's tough to see teams in another division. You just simply don't have time. But I think the transparency in the voting is terrific. And again, if you don't have the conviction to stand up and defend your vote, you shouldn't have the vote, period. That's just my opinion.
I think that makes perfect sense, Steve.
I
can't see really how the thing is, you're not going to have these writers coming on shows and defending their actions.
I think it goes back to when two writers left Pedro Martinez off the MVP ballot entirely a few years ago. And that that was the first time that I can recall this, sort of this outrage. And you can go back to Ted Williams being left off the ballots by Boston writers a long time ago and on and on and on. But that, to me, really started the whole thing when there was a writer in New York and a writer in Minnesota who left Pager off the MVP ballot entirely and decided that they were going to take it upon themselves to change the criteria of the voting process. And that's the first time I remember there being outrage over writers' votes. Writers do a great job, and it's subjective. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, and in a way, there are no wrong answers. Everybody has an opinion and a vote, and you can't say that one person is wrong or incorrect. But that's a tough one. Not in the top three. And it's not like not getting a third-place vote on one ballot cost Wade Miley the Rookie of the Year award. That's silly. But it's curious. I'll say that.
How do you think the voting's going to go down on Thursday for AL MVP?
Boy, that's a tough one, man. If you talk to players and ex-players, and I do that all the time, every one of them will tell you it's a no-brainer Miguel Cabrera. And everyone, and I mean everyone, they believe the guy won the Triple Crown, go on the field, watch the games, it's not even close. Miguel Cabrera is the guy. If you talk to writers or broadcasters or sabermetricians or bloggers, they will all tell you it's not even close. Mike Trout is the guy. It's a very interesting dynamic there, and I think this is maybe the first time where we have the sort of the two schools colliding, coming in opposite directions on the same railroad track and are about to collide. It's going to be very curious to see what happens. And you can make the numbers say almost anything you want. We can talk about war and RBIs and all that. But I have no idea. I think it's going to be fascinating. I really do. I have no idea how it's going to go, but I can tell you for a fact, every writer I know says Trout. Every player I know says Cabrera.
Interesting that for you that's the split, because I found it's been much more of an old-young split. Anybody who's old enough to remember Yaz getting the Triple Crown thinks Cabrera has it and it's a no-brainer. Anybody who isn't of that era, the 20-year-old, the 25-year-old, even the 30-year-old seems to think the Trout is just the most incredible player they've ever seen.
I don't think it comes down to the age so much as I think it comes down to the people that watch the games and the people that watch the numbers. And I really think those two schools or groups can be separate and often are. I think we too often watch the numbers and don't watch the games. And as I basically spent the last 6 years getting paid to watch baseball games. We would sit in our room and watch 15 games a night with all our analysts and then go on TV and talk about it. So I've consumed a great deal of televised baseball over the last 6 years or so. But I don't think that enough guys watch the games. It's easy to sit down with the numbers in front of you after the games have been played and break it down and say who did well and who didn't and what worked and what didn't when you're just looking at the numbers. And I'm certainly not insinuating that somebody that is a sabermetrician doesn't watch the games, but I don't know if they watch enough of the games. And to me, that's where the conflict is. It's the guys who just watch the games and it's the guys who just watch the numbers. And yes, of course, there are definitely people that do both. And I just think that we need more of the people that do both, because there's certainly merits in both sides. And I think you have to find the happy medium somewhere. And that's where I think it gets a little tricky.
And I agree with that about it not being a generational thing, because as you stated, the players see something. The players can see something that not necessarily everybody else will see in a guy. They're up there, they're playing right with him, and you know, these guys are all young guys as well. So I agree with that. It's I guess you gotta look at a guy every single day. It's something that a mathematician can't really see just by looking on paper. There's a different dynamic when you're on the field with the guy.
Yeah, I agree. And it ties into the same philosophy when you talk about things like saves and things like RBIs, which a lot of and I hate to throw the word sabermetricians out there because it's a massive generalization, but just for the sake of simplicity, the conversation, we'll just say sabermetricians will, of course, tell you that saves are meaningless, and they'll tell you that RBIs are really a stat of opportunity, and they're really just an accounting number, and it's not a reflection of ability. And then you'll talk to a player who will tell you the complete opposite, that it takes a special guy to get up there and get those last three outs of the game, because the last three outs are just different. Sorry, they're different three outs than the outs in the seventh and the eighth inning. They just are. It's harder. It's a different job. And the hitter will tell you that I've had great arguments about this with Nomar Garciaparra. I mean, he, if you tell him RBIs don't mean anything, he'll go crazy on you. in a great way, he'll go, really, you stand in there and drive in that run from second base with two outs and then tell me it doesn't mean anything and it's just an accounting stat. Really? It takes a special guy in that situation to come through and drive that run in, and you've got to have that guy. And I see both sides of it. I'm really a moderate on this. I think whip is a great stat, and I think pitcher wins actually mean something. I get killed for that all the time, and I'm sorry. You're not allowed to throw pitcher wins out. Nope, you're not. I know you want to, but we're not going to let you. It still counts for something. Is it a perfect indicator of pitching performance? Of course not. It's a deeply flawed stat, but somewhere down that road, it still matters. It still counts for something. And I think we need to come to more of a middle ground on this. And I think that the AL MVP vote is sort of going to get us there. And that's what, to me, is so fascinating about it.
Finishing up with Steve Berthume, the new play-by-play man for the Arizona Diamondbacks. You mentioned before that for the last 6 years you've been paid to sit in a room and watch baseball. And I think other than the people who are in the MLB fan cave, you've probably watched more games than anyone, which means that you're about to go through a major adjustment this year. You're going to be watching one team consistently.
Yeah, it's going to be a massive adjustment for me, and I couldn't be more excited about it, I tell you. Just the opportunity to get out of the studio and go to the ballpark every day is a dream come true for me. And I've done some play-by-play. My bosses at ESPN were great this year about giving me opportunity to do games whenever they popped up. And it's a completely different deal than hosting a show. In some sense, there also are a lot of similarities. I mean, if you're doing an hour baseball tonight on a typical Saturday night, say, when there's 15 games, most of the time you're sort of doing play-by-play over taped highlights instead of live action. And, you know, we really haven't seen the plays. I mean, we've seen the plays when watching the games, but we haven't seen the edited highlight. We're seeing that for the first time along with a viewer. So you are sort of doing play-by-play as you go along here, and you're working in with different analysts here and there, and you're setting them up and you're wrapping up and moving on to the next thing. So there are a lot of similarities there. But in terms of just being at the ballpark and following the team and being part of the organization, yeah, it's going to be quite different. It's something I'm really excited about.
Well, considering we don't get ESPN up here, it means that with my MLB.TV subscription, I'm going to get to hear a lot more season.
How do you keep up on the Tim Tebow news if you don't get it? do you even know who Tim Tebow is? How do you survive?
Unfortunately, yes, we do.
We unfortunately still get Deadspin, Steve, so we're all good.
Things have taken an interesting direction.
Your seat there is still warm, so we'll save that ESPN conversation for another time.
Yeah, I've been at ESPN for 12 years, and the last six all exclusively on baseball tonight, and I really think that I've had the best job at the network for the last 6 years, and I'm really going to miss all my friends and colleagues on the show. The show means a great deal to me and always will. I put a lot of myself into it, but I got a lot more back, and my relationships with the guys on the show have just been fantastic. It's been a true privilege, and now moving on to something else, and I can't wait to get started.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, and we'll be listening and watching, and hopefully we can be in touch during the season.
That's great. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Steve. Have a great night.
You too.
There he goes, Steve Berthume. Follow him on Twitter at BertDBacks. That was fun, AJ?
It was. Speaking of Twitter, I got a little tweet here from Max Harris,
yes,
if I may.
Of course.
He says at J-Pub Radio, if players are so great at evaluating talent, how come the best ones make lousy execs and coaches? Well, I'll tell you exactly why, Max, because when they are execs and when they are coaches, they're looking at it just like anybody else is, from above, not on the field, not playing with the guy. They're looking at it through paper and through video, and it's just not the same. Believe me, I've played the game. I know.
I'll tell you, Jay, I'm absolutely terrified right now. This week, I've been asked by the CBC to debate with Roger Brulot, the former Montreal Expos play-by-play man, former Montreal Expos legend. Debate. I have to take the sabermetric side. Roger takes the traditionalist side. I've got a lot of studying to do between now and Wednesday morning.
Don't study. Just, I can't help you out because I'm not really on your side on that. But, I still love you, Max.
I'll say it now. Jonah Carey, help me, Jonah Carey, help me.
He's the only guy who may be able to at this point.
This is the Kaufman Show. Our thanks to Steve Berthume. Honestly, somebody I've been wanting to talk to for a long time, and hey, man, that met all my expectations. Who's up next, Jay?
I don't know.
All right.
What are you asking me for?
Yeah, all right. Up next.
You're the guy who books the show.
All right, we'll talk a little hip-hop karaoke next with Olivia Benaroche. Okay. It'll be fun. This is The Kaufman Show. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you, as we always are. And it's time for probably my favorite time of the week, because we do this every week. If you listen to the show, you know that every week Olivia Benaroche is in studio promoting hip-hop karaoke. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Thanks for having me.
It was great. You know, the segment last week was so fantastic, we figured we'd do it again.
Love it.
And, of course, Thursday night is the big event, the triumphant return. We were just kidding before. The triumphant return of hip-hop karaoke.
It is quite triumphant.
Congratulations, first of all, for taking over the reins from Brittany Tyson, who's now off at Twitter in San Francisco.
Yeah, there was actually a team. Brittany, Pat, and Morgan were the previous kind of organizers of the event.
Okay.
Still working closely with Morgan to get the show up and running, but he has started to pass the ball onto myself and a lovely team of five other organizers. So we are extremely excited to get the ball running.
Awesome. So for those who don't know, please tell us a little bit about Hip Hop Karaoke, which is Thursday night, which is the 15th of November at the Belmont, 4483 Saint Laurent.
That's right. So Hip Hop Karaoke, other than being the greatest thing to happen to humanity since the beginning of time.
No hyperbole there.
No. It is a monthly event that takes place at the Belmont, as you just said. And what we do is we really want to pay homage to our favorite rappers and hip hop icons. So what we do is we invite performers to come on stage and rap their favorite old school rap hip hop song. The catch, though, unlike other karaoke bars, hip-hop karaoke does not project lyrics on a wall. There's no bouncy balls. You don't get to follow along with the lyrics and stumble along. We take it very seriously. It's something we expect performers to kind of practice ahead of time and really come up on stage and show us what they're made of. So this kind of makes the event very unique in a sense, and it really does bring all people together. It's not just for hip-hop and rap lovers. It's really for music lovers. It's it's an entertainment event. It's a cultural event. And I think everybody really does look forward to it. So, like I said, we are really excited for this Thursday. It's going to be great. And we really hope you guys all come out and check it out.
It sells out every year. So you're going to want to try and get there early. The doors are at 10. The ticket's $5 if you get there before 11 o'clock, $10 afterwards.
That's right.
And why don't you give us a little bit of an example?
Well, I'm going to give you a little sneak peek.
Just a hint. Yes. You know, a little something to show us what to expect on Thursday night.
Okay, I'm going to give you a sneak peek.
Okay. So once again, no bouncy balls.
No bouncy balls. You got to come correct. I mean, the old slogan was take it from the shower to the stage. Now it's, are you ready to become a legend? But I'm going to show you right now what it's all about. I may be a drama mama, don't lie me. She doing things like having a boys cover neighborhood, some studio, trying to find me. She gate to take her Houston America Pie, take her White House, that's my house. I disconnect the cable, turn the lights out. Let her know her grandchild is a baby, not a paycheck. Private schools, daycare, shit, medical bills, I pay that. I love you, mom, and everything. See, I don't want you lay down. You want her if you'll start a custody war, my lawyer stay down. She never got a chance to hear my side, sorry, was divided. She had fish fries, cookouts, your child birthday, I ain't invited despite it. I show her the utmost respect when I fall through. All you do is defend that lady when I call you. So that was a little preview of Miss Jackson, which you will see in completion this Thursday with my girl Baby J. I go by O-Swag, so check us out on YouTube or Twitter, HHKMTL, Facebook, Instagram. We're on all of it. We're everywhere.
You can also follow Olivia on Twitter at OG Benaroche, BENAROCHE. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Olivia.
Thank you, Dave. I hope everyone comes out, checks out the great event. It's going to be awesome.
I'll be there once again. Hip Hop Karaoke Montreal, the 15th of November. That is Thursday night. Doors are at 10 o'clock. Tickets are $5. $10 if you get there after 11.
Thanks a lot.
This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be back. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar here with you, as we always are on Monday nights. TSN Radio 690 in Montreal. Jay, I think this is officially Dave's Irons theme song.
It has to be.
Especially after seeing his Halloween costume.
Suits the mood, too.
Does it?
Yeah.
You feel like...
When he comes on, you know, it's just a perfect soundtrack for him.
Well, let's see what's new this week in the world of Dave's Iron. Good evening, Dave. Welcome back to the program.
Come on, all of y'all, it's a sabotage. Man, you play that music, I swear I'm bouncing off the walls. I am punting kittens. I'm just feeling great.
That's
about
the whole idea. That's the whole idea. That's how we get you pumped up right before you come on.
Unbelievable.
How are you, sir?
Honestly, I'm dealing with a Schadenfreude overdose. I mean, all of the most arrogant people in life have had their head forcibly put up their own asses in the last week. It's an amazing feeling. I mean, not just Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, of course, but you've got Nick Saban, you got Phil Jackson, you've got all the people who said nobody believes in the Atlanta Falcons. Well, there's a reason. I mean, it's really wonderful.
That's hilarious. You know, it's funny. The last time we spoke, we discussed Schadenfreude, but I'm happy that you get to experience it this time. See, karma, man. The world just evens out. It's wonderful.
It's the only word in German I like.
All right. Well, before we get on to the pro sports kick and discuss the election, like I know I'm dying to with you, let's discuss your new article in The Nation. It's fantastic. Tell us about this 9-year-old girl in Utah that's better than all the boys in football.
Well, I mean, this has been all over the news here in the States just because the highlights themselves are so remarkable. Her name is Sam Gordon. She's from right outside of Salt Lake City, Utah. She plays peewee football, and you watch her on the field, and seriously, I mean, it looks like Reggie Bush when he was at USC. She's just moving at a different speed than everybody else. And she actually looks like I was thinking about this. She looks like when like Mario gets the special speed powers when you play Super Mario Brothers, and just moves like this little thin person moving like at the speed of light with a little comet going behind her. And a lot of people have been passing around the YouTube videos and talking about her like she's like just another one of those YouTube curios. And I used it to talk about like the question of like a historical question, like, well, why do we segregate youth sports? Why do we put girls on one side of the gym and boys on the other? What are the historical roots of that? Is it just the natural order of things? Why is it enforced? And, you know, try to look through those issues.
You mentioned one of the pioneers of feminism in the States, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and her quote, we cannot say that the woman might be physically if the girl were allowed all the freedom of the boy in romping, swimming, climbing, and playing ball.
Well, it's an interesting question because we've seen even since Title IX, I mean, look at a picture of what a woman athlete looked like in 1965 at a college, and look what a woman athlete looks like now. I mean, the advantages in terms of training, the advantages in terms of coaching has literally shaped and changed women's bodies. So if you see that, and you also see these things as being very fluid, like, for example, like Mark Spitz, he would not, in 1972, of course, he won 7 gold medals at the Munich Olympics. I don't think, would have even made the women's Olympic swim team in 2012.
That's
crazy. I mean, so the times themselves are very fluid. Athletic achievement is very fluid. It's very evolutionary. And, you know, Sam Gordon just might be the future.
And what's interesting, and again, something that you brought up and something that I only learned when I went to Cooperstown for the first time, is how prevalent women in baseball was in the 19th century. And it was only with the masculinization of sports and society that you saw. And I guess you look at Teddy Roosevelt and things like that show that it was for manly men.
Oh, yeah. And what's interesting, too, is like that there's a lot of these sort of instances in the 20th century where you see that, gosh, we could have a world where women played baseball with men. Like, this was stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor of the article. But there in the Negro Leagues, 3 women played. One of them was Mamie Peanut Johnson. She went 33-8 over the course of 3 seasons as a pitcher. She also batted .278. There was a woman, I'm blanking on her name, but people can get on the Google and see it. But in 1931, she struck out Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, and she had a contract that was then taken away from her. And so it's like you see these little glimpses that say, well, wait a minute. You know, it's like we're not talking about like average man versus average woman. We're talking about excellence. And when you talk about excellence, I mean, that gender line gets a lot more foggy.
I don't think that this is a discussion about how women should be playing in Major League Baseball or the National Football League. It's more about at the grassroots level, right?
Because that's the only way I think you would really see these changes. And it's also about doing this before puberty, before teenage years, et cetera. But, like, I think it would actually go a long way towards helping boys and girls relate to each other. I mean, anybody who has any memory of what life was like when they were 9, 10, 11 years old, and that feeling like when you start to realize that girls are an alien creature from you as a boy. And, you know, all your friends are all of a sudden all boys and all the girls are over there. I mean, you could see the way, you know, and I think that's one of the things that makes adolescence so tortured for so many young people. And, you know, we could look at that as a charming rite of passage now that we're in our 30s or whatever. But, you know, at the time, it sucked. It really sucked. And so it would be, I think a mark of progress if sports could be used as a way to break down some of those barriers and, you know, make kids feel a little less alienated from each other.
I remember there were girls, not many, but I'd say 1 or 2 in the league, in my house league when I was playing hockey growing up. And you know what? They had to be the best players on their teams or they wouldn't have been able to tough it out and deal with the locker room BS and all the rest of it. But these girls they could skate circles around the guys. And I don't know if this happens in the States as well, but I find that a lot of the kids who are really good at hockey here start off taking figure skating.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that, I guess right away that probably teaches you to be a little bit tougher because you probably, the guy who's taking figure skating with the girls to become a better skater probably has to deal with just as much from the other side.
I think U.S., youth hockey leagues would be a lot better off if they did do that. I mean, far too often it's, and I can tell you here living in D.C., particularly since the Caps have been better in recent years, youth hockey has just exploded. I mean, the number of kids who are doing it here. But none of them start with figure skating. And where they start is just on the skates, with the stick, on the ice. And the problem with it, unfortunately, is that they all skate like crap. So they're like these little kids who are just sort of slamming into each other on the ice. And, you know, sometimes they even hurt each other. So it would be actually really good if if they could break out of that a little bit and actually learn what it means to skate.
Well, Dave, it was a very interesting article about gender equality and gender segregation, and you have to figure with the results of last week's election, this is only going to move forward, whereas perhaps if Romney had won, there could have been a major setback for women's rights in the states.
Well, the only way Romney would have won is if we'd reverted back to 19th century suffrage rules in the United States.
I don't know. Did you see how white men voted, Dave?
That was quite the thing. But look, I got like just a couple of exit poll things just to give you an idea of how satisfying this was on so many levels. This was the first election since the Bay of Pigs that a majority of Cuban Americans voted for the Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, that is crazy. Here's another one for you. In 2004, 80% of Mormons voted for George W. Bush. Romney just got 78% of the Mormon vote.
That's shocking.
So here's the first ever Mormon candidate of a major party, and he didn't get as many votes as the 2004 guy. And there's a reason for that. And there's a very basic reason, is that he's a rich jackass. And I'm sorry, but if you are just the worst kind of rich jackass, calling 47% of the country victims, talking about your wife's dressage horse, people ask you who your favorite athletes are, and you mention sports team owners. That really happened. And, you know, what is he like about NASCAR? Oh, I like a lot of the NASCAR owners. I mean, you're going to turn people off. Even your own coterie of Mormon followers. So I mean, this was something that was very satisfying to see, because honestly, if in the year of Occupy Wall Street, if Mitt Romney had managed to build a kind of like white majority rule, it would have been really depressing going forward here. Like, I mean, a lot of people said to me, like, hey, you're going to move to Canada if Romney wins, because that's what everybody in the States always says. And I'm like, look, I love Canada. I love Canada so much, I wouldn't subject myself to Canada. Canada deserves better than me. But what I would have done is I would have moved to Utah. Because I was like, okay, Utah, you're going to make America like you? Well, I'm going to make Utah like me. That would have been my big revenge move.
Wow, Dave Zirin starring on Big Love.
That's right. Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah, I mean, my wife wasn't thrilled with the idea, but no. I figured, hey, if it's good enough for the president's grandfather, then it's good enough for me.
We started with Schadenfreude, and we're going to end with Schadenfreude. For me, the ultimate example of it was watching Fox News after the election had been called last week. I don't know if you switched over, but for me, that was just seeing how shocked everybody was at, frankly, what we all realized was a foregone conclusion. And it's as if they never heard of Nate Silver. I mean, I just don't understand it.
No, they were like, what is this gobbledygook math thing, this gobbledygook science? And what's this all I'm hearing about the Earth being round? But I'll tell you what I did is I watched the Fox, and then I hit rewind on my TiVo, and it was amazing because I watched Karl Rove's sweat go up on his face. It was amazing to watch the sweat travel up into his brow. And seriously, what it was like, why? Because, you know, Karl Rove's face looks like a giant ham. And so to watch it in reverse was like watching a ham unglaze. It's covered in sweat. He looks like this glazed ham. So you do it backwards, and it's like, look at that. The ham is unglazing before our very eyes. I mean, I don't want to say I got an insane amount of enjoyment over this, but I got an insane amount of enjoyment over this. Let me tell you something. Mitt Romney's tears, Karl Rove's, the sweat on his brow, Paul Ryan's whiny cries, it is sweeter than my mother's milk. I am thrilled with it. So let them weep, because their tears, they will sustain me in the years to come.
I think they realize that it's all over for them. It's all over for the business elitist white man, because come next election, and perhaps the election after that, they're a dying breed, and I think they see that.
And the more they try to suppress the votes of people, that was the stupidest thing they did.
Yeah.
Because it made masses of people in this country, and I'll tell you this firsthand, like, people were waiting online 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, and it adopted a kind of civil rights feel you haven't seen in the U.S. election in decades. Okay, and it wasn't because of love of Obama. That's what people got to understand. It's like the disappointments with Obama are very real, and they're across the country. It was more like, who the hell are you to tell me that I'm not going to vote? My grandparents died for the right to vote. My parents fought in the streets for the right to vote. You're going to make this hard for me to vote? I will stand on this line. I will outlast you. I have more endurance than you. And frankly, I'm tougher than Mitt Romney and his henchmen in these different states.
Dave Zirin is the sports editor of The Nation magazine. You can read it online at thenation.com. He also has a wonderful weekly radio show called Edge of Sports Radio. You can download it on iTunes. Mr. Zirin,
we got to get you guys on the show. I want to get you guys on the show to talk about the Montreal Expos.
Anytime.
It would be an honor, sir.
Anytime.
I mean, I want
Dave.
You both on because I want the world to know, especially this younger generation who doesn't know what the Expos are or what they meant back in the day, about why those teams of Tim Wallach and Gary Carter and Rock Raines and Charlie Lee and the great Elias Sosa, why those guys still haunt you to this day.
Dave, you made my day. Anytime you want us, we will be more than happy to appear on the program.
I didn't even mention Tim Gullickson.
Bill Gullickson. That's okay.
I couldn't bring it home.
That's all right. You know, it's been a while since those 18 Ks against the Cubbies in his rookie season, and, you know, Kerry Wood kind of eclipsed that.
Ah, God, I still can't believe it. But I remember when Charlie Lee started the All-Star game against Dave Steeb, the All-Canada All-Star game.
There you go.
Well done, sir. Mr. Zirin, congratulations on your Rookie of the Year for that clown question, bro.
Oh, no problem.
You know, Davey Johnson signed for another year. There's hope in Washington.
Yeah, that's something.
You're going to be nice about the Expos. I'm going to be nice about the Nationals. It's quid pro quo, okay?
That sounds good. That's a quid pro quo I can live with.
Dave, thanks so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
My privilege, fellas.
Catch you soon. Our thanks to Dave Zirin. Follow him on Twitter at Edge of Sports. This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be back.
Hi, my name's Paul Langlois. I play with The Tragically Hip, and you're listening to The Kaufman Show.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar here with you. We're going to open up the phone lines for the next little bit. 514-790-1690-1690. Toll free, 1-866-896-2546. Still to come, a little baseball talk with Jeff Baker joins us in studio, and some basketball with our NBA correspondent, Max Kerman. Let's go to Jerry in Snowden. Good evening, Jerry.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Very good. How are you, sir?
Not bad, not too great, but happy that Mr. President Obama got reelected.
Yes, inshallah.
And you should hear the conservatives in the United States.
I know.
They are bashing the party. They are bashing themselves. It's amazing. I'm so happy to see that.
Doesn't it remind you of the Democrats after Kerry lost, or the liberals in this country after they got obliterated?
Oh, I don't.
It's all cyclical, man, you know. They'll come back eventually.
Yeah, but the thing is you made reference to watching Fox,
yeah,
which is a network I hated watching. And I hate They always call themselves fair and balanced. That's not true.
It's part of the joke, Jerry. Come on. You gotta just catch it for the humor.
They even knew that it was funny when they would say that.
I will say this, though. Election night, they did the story as it was supposed to be done. I mean, they called, Karl Rove said, don't call Ohio after they'd called Ohio, and they stuck with it.
Guy Morris was saying that.
Yeah, Dick Morris.
Yeah, and he worked for Clinton, if you recall.
Yeah, he wrote Primary Colors.
Yeah.
When he wrote it, it was written under a pseudonym, but he's the guy that wrote Primary Colors.
I never read it. What was it? Do you remember?
It's a wonderful book about a fictional Southern governor named Jack Stanton, who's basically Bill Clinton. There's a movie. You can
fictional in quotation marks.
Save yourself the effort of the book and watch the movie with John Travolta and Emma Thompson playing the soon-to-be First Lady. A fantastic movie. Kathy Bates. Billy Bob Thornton plays the James Carville character. It's a wonderfully cast film.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. Dave.
Oh, Jimmy's got me. Joe Klein wrote Primary Colors. Jimmy,
wow.
Thank you, sir. Dick Morris is just a Clintonite, I guess, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Dave Zirin referred back to the expos, and
yeah.
I remember when they were formed. They came in in 69, and it was around Expo 67, they were talking about it. And I remember going to games at Jerry Park, and you sat so I remember I was with my wife. We had just gotten married, and we were sitting at a baseball game. And we were so close to the bullpen that when the relief pitchers were spitting up, you know what, you could see it so well. It was like they were spitting on you. That's how great it was.
I never got to experience Jerry Park, but
it was fantastic.
Yeah, it must have been something
exact
else.
Exact opposite of Olympic Stadium.
You know what I did this week, Jerry? You'll appreciate this. I found myself in the east side of this wonderful city of ours, and I went to Delormier and Ontario, and went out and looked at the little plaque that they have on for Jackie Robinson on the spot of where Delormier Downs used to be. And Jay's looking at me all nostalgic. Yeah, I'm cheesy. What can I say? Jay, I'm never on that street corner. I had never stopped there before. I'd never stopped and parked.
Royals.
Well, you know. Now you're dating yourself, Jerry. That's okay. You can still stay up late. You're still cool. We appreciate it.
Oh, your show's the best.
Aw, thanks so much. Thanks for the call.
I'll talk to you later.
Have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
So keep them coming. 514-790-1866-896-2546. Let's go to Travis in Asheville, North Carolina. Good evening, Travis.
Good evening, Jay and Dave.
How are you?
Relaxed. How about that?
Good. We like
not
that. Well,
worried.
You're not in Colorado. You can't be that relaxed.
No, that's not what I meant.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah, I mean, that was a real relief, you know.
Last week?
Yes.
Yeah, but again, were you that nervous?
Yes, because you have to remember, I've volunteered with things down here. I knew that the North Carolina, Obama lost North Carolina by about 90,000 votes, and it was rife with manipulation down here. You know, my district was gerrymandered, split into two different districts. People didn't know where they were going to vote. I guarantee it would have been at least 20,000 more in this area alone. So when you see that happening, you worry because, you know, there are ways.
Mm-hmm. By hook or by crook.
By hook or by crook. And although the post-mortem reading Nate Silver did make me relax, I realized that it wasn't actually Ohio or Florida that tipped the election. It wasn't even Virginia. It was Colorado. And it's looking like, you know, in the future, to bring in politics, sports, and media all in one ball, it's not only women. It's also the Latino vote.
Right.
And you see, as soccer gains popularity, that has a lot to do with it. You can see it happening, that there are almost enough to win guaranteed to someone who is not a Republican, whoever they may be.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've never laid eyes on you, Travis, but I have to assume that you're a white male like I am. And
quite white.
All right. We are obsolete, my friend.
Indeed. And it feels nice.
Yeah, it does.
Gotta tell you.
It's about time that America became the Benetton that they've been talking about for the last 200 years. Melting pot, Jay.
They're not even close.
They're obviously close.
They're closer.
They're obviously close because if only white men voted for president, Mitt Romney would be president right now, and he would have had something obscene like 370 electoral votes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only reason is because there's less white men. That's the only reason.
Well, again,
it's got nothing to do with progress through social.
Well, frankly, immigration is progress in the U.S.
Well, I mean, a lot of them are getting in, and that's good. It's not necessarily because they're being let in.
Right.
Believe me.
Well, no, I don't think that's not. Jay, those people aren't the ones that are voting.
You don't think so?
The illegal aliens? I hate that term.
Illegal aliens?
That's just a terrible term.
Illegal aliens.
Such an awful term.
I know, it is terrible.
Openly illegal aliens?
Openly illegal aliens.
Even worse?
Yeah.
You know, Jay, you know, people are never given this kind of thing. You know, they're not being let in. People have to fight for it.
Yeah, that's right. And that's exactly it. It's unfortunate that they have to fight for it, though. That's the problem.
It is. Well, that's the legacy. That's the selling of the American dream, the you're all equal while being held down in the forehead and say, no, you're not.
Yeah, that's the funniest part of this whole thing is a lot of people are going after this so-called American dream, and then they get there and they're like, wow, was I wrong?
Well, yeah, because things have changed from the Horatio Alger novels.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't really work that way.
I should turn back and go back to my country where they're cutting people's heads off every day, you know.
And you look at the messaging of the Republican Party, the higher ups who have to speak publicly now are being very cautious. They're not becoming smart yet, but they're not saying the dumb things that they've been saying for the last 30 years. However, they're not the ones who get to determine who runs. With the primary system, particularly the open primary system in the United States, it's the crazy people who are going to determine who their candidates are.
Well, let's hope not. And if there is a crazy faction, let's hope it's not Rubio Jindal, but Christy Springsteen in 2016.
I can handle that.
Travis, yeah. Thanks so much for the call.
And that's why the most interesting part of the election is when the Republicans are trying to get a leader and you watch these debate with all these crazy people.
Oh, man, remember Rick Perry in the last one?
And it's the best thing. And it's amazing that the only time that Romney can garner any kind of votes or any kind of support is when he moves towards the center.
Of course.
Which he completely did. You know, I mean, if you look at his stuff back in the day and you look at his beliefs and exactly what he was saying, I mean, it's so far right, it's scary.
I mean, for crying out loud, he moved to the left.
The
last debate was, I agree with the president on this, and I agree with the president on this. And he was totally trying to pander.
And that was the only way that he can do it.
And it was his...
And I'm happy. And that is progress. You know, I'm being facetious and I'm being stupid sometimes, but that is progress, that when a right-wing candidate has to move closer to the center in order for him to get any kind of support, well, then I guess they have progressed.
It was the death knell of the Republican Party, at least for the next few years. We'll see what happens. That was supposed to be a segment on the lockout.
What?
That was supposed to be a segment on the lockout.
Well, yeah, there was a little bit about some stupid people there.
That's right.
Yeah. And no progress?
None. None.
Stupid white men in high positions.
We reached out to the NHLPA once again tonight, and the response that we got was that they didn't want to come on because they wanted the focus to remain on the four gentlemen being inducted into the Hall of Fame tonight. And frankly, as a fan of Joe Sakic and as a fan of Pavel Bure, I kind of agree with it. Matt Sundin, I couldn't really be fussed either way, frankly. But, you know, not a Leafs guy. How Sundin is the biggest name, well, I guess because everything's so Toronto-centric, right?
I'll always see Sundin as a Nordique.
Wow, you're old school, man.
But it's not even remotely true, but
Sakic
I just thought it would say that.
Sakic, too?
Sakic, yeah, he's always a Nordique to me.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
If they were going in with caps like it was baseball.
Hey, they played on the same team together. Imagine those
they
two
did.
With Peter Forsberg and
Sundin was a rookie.
Adam Foote. And, wow, what a team they had. Canadians came back in that infamous series after they had a 2-0 lead, 1993.
Wasn't it Wendell Clark for Matt Sundin?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Wow, poor Quebec.
Well, what's interesting about that is that they're both, you know, saints in the city of Toronto,
mm-hmm.
along with St. Douglas of Gilmore. This is the Kaufman Show.
What?
A Dougie.
Oh, killer.
Killer. The killer of Crescent Street. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We have a very special in-studio guest for the next few minutes, maybe a little longer if I can convince him. Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. It's great to be back.
Yeah, welcome back to town. Jeff is a Montrealer. I grew up reading his stuff in the Montreal Gazette. Taught me about the real world back then, and then now you're onto sports.
Now I'm on a sports.
Have been for a long time.
Have been for quite a while. I'll tell you what, one of the things I got to do this weekend, which I haven't done in about 20 years, I got to go see a Vanier College football game. I used to play for Vanier College way back when they let anybody play, and that was in the 80s. And I haven't seen them play in 20 years, and I got to go back this weekend and see a game, which was a lot of fun.
You don't hear much about CJEP-level football.
You should. I'll tell you what. That's probably the best level out there in North America outside of the college ranks. I mean, it's a notch higher than anything you're going to find in U.S. high school football, and I know that because I see a lot of it where I am in Washington. My next-door neighbor is actually a defensive lineman for one of the top-ranked teams in the state. And I looked down the heights and weights category of his football team, and then I looked at the Vanier College heights and weights list, and there was no comparison. Vanier, I think, has a fullback, weighs 260 pounds.
Oh, wow.
That would be bigger than the entire offensive line, I think, for that high school team.
What about things like, quality of play and atmosphere? Because you hear so many, you know, Friday night lights. You go to, you think about, like, small Texas towns on a Friday night, and the whole place just stops for football.
I'll tell you what, that's the thing I hear all the time, especially, you know, some guys that I work with. They sometimes look at the old videos on YouTube, and they say, you played that. That looks like junior high school. And I said, no, you just got to put 30,000 people in the stands. And then you got to, you got to put all the hype. You got to put the shinier uniforms in there, and then you'll realize what it is. But I'll tell you what, you look at any CFL game on TV these days, and a good half dozen to a dozen guys will probably have come out of the CJEP ranks. And you can't say that about most United States high schools. So, there are quite a few talented people, including they have coaches that I played with over there. Ron Aboud, excellent quarterback for years.
I remember
Concordia.
Ron from Concordia. Yeah, absolutely, from the Shrine Bowl.
I think he runs a quarterback camp right now, one of the better rated ones in Canada, actually.
Wow.
And, it was good seeing. I played with him, I think, in 1986 over at Vanier. But he went on to much bigger and better things.
I remember Ron Aboud throwing a Hail Mary in the McGill-Concordia Shrine Bowl game, probably the first football game I ever went to. And the game ended on a 100-yard pass. It was... I'll never forget that guy.
That'll bring you back. I'll tell you what, he did some pretty good things. I played against him since I was a little kid, and then I played with him that one year in 86. And him and a guy named Chris Flynn, there's a name from the past, over at Champlain-Lennoxville. If it wasn't for Chris Flynn, we would have won the Bull D'Or that year. I think it was 48-42. It was a Chris Flynn versus Ron Aboud game, and, that was fun to watch. Anybody's got a tape on that, go back and rewind it. It was in a snowstorm, too, at Molson Stadium.
Yeah, that might end up being on beta, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, maybe it predates beta. I think it predates RDS also.
Well, it definitely predates Mike Trout, who won the MVP today, and you were one of 28 voters to help make it a unanimous decision. Any thoughts on that?
It was the easiest vote I'm ever going to have as a member of the BBWA. If the Hall of Fame vote this year could be as easy as that, we'd all be laughing. I mean, the biggest thing was just making sure you filled out second and third place right, because everybody knew Mike Trout was going to get it. I mean, hands down, the best rookie performance I've seen from anybody, I'd say, since Ichiro Suzuki in 2001. He wasn't technically a rookie. Well, he was a rookie technically, but, I mean, he was a 30-year-old rookie. But Mike Trout reminds me a lot of Ichiro in the way he destabilizes the defense and the opposing pitcher. I haven't seen anybody since Ichiro who could do that other than Trout. The difference is Trout actually has home run power to go with his excellent speed and his bat handling abilities and his ability to recognize pitches. But just when Mike Trout gets going, if he hits a two hopper to the shortstop, you don't know if that's going to be an easy out, a 6-3 like it usually is. And Ichiro was the only other guy I saw who could do that. And then once he gets on base, the pitcher starts freaking out. The defense doesn't know what to do. They're moving around. They know if it's, if he's going to take off or what. And it's just the destabilizing factor of Trout alone is why I think he's going to be, he has a legit shot at being the MVP this year. But Rookie of the Year was a no-brainer.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, nothing to take away from Cespedes or from Yu Darvish, but what he did, and even considering the fact that he missed the first 22 games of the season before he was called up, it's just incredible. And you would think that the Angels probably regret that move.
I'm sure they regret that move. Yeah. That and giving Irvin Santana a slot in the starting rotation, they probably regret that a little bit. Yeah, I mean, Mike Trout, you know, not single-handedly responsible for keeping the Angels in it. I mean, they had a very good offense this year, and, you know, the guys like Torii Hunter and Albert Pujols, but he was the guy that kept that team afloat back when they were trying to find themselves in May. And you know what? Give another week or two in the season, they probably would have made the playoffs, but yeah. They waited a little too long.
So here we are with Thursday coming and the MVP about to be named. I think this is going to create a bit of a class war amongst the baseball institutions out there.
No, I think you're right. I think it's unfortunate because I think there's cases to be made for both guys, even a sabermetric case to be made for both guys. I think they're both hugely deserving. If either one of them wins, I won't have a problem with it. You know, my vote would tend to go towards Miguel Cabrera, and I'll tell you why. In the past, you know, one of the things we look at with an MVP, it's not most outstanding player like they have in this. They still have that in the CFL, I think, right? Most outstanding?
Yeah, I think they do.
Which is more of a stats thing. I mean, if you've got the best stats, you are the most outstanding. But, you know, this is an award for the most valuable, and that's what makes it interesting because everybody's got their own interpretations of value, and the BBWA recommendations don't help one bit because they leave it wide open to interpretation, which
it's
is the
same
way
ones that they in 1931.
Well, you know what? You could say that, but the reason it's gone that long is because it works. It works. Everybody's talking about this thing. Nobody would be talking about it if everybody knew that Mike Trout was going to win it or everybody knew that, oh, the Triple Crown means Cabrera is going to win it.
Right.
For me, I mean, Cabrera produced at the level that he did throughout the season, and he produced more specifically right in August and September when his team could have been eliminated from the postseason. I mean, that Tigers team probably should have been eliminated from the postseason if the White Sox had you know, figured things out in
right.
September, but they didn't, and he kept them going. It was him and Prince Fielder were a two-man team for a long period of time because they had a lot of pitching injuries in Detroit this year. They had terrible struggles in the 5 and 6 spot, and they were the offense. Those two guys were the offense, and he kept his offense up. Mike Trout, brilliant player, did great all around, but you know what? His offense tailed off just a bit at a key moment in the season for the Angels. Now, I'm not blaming their collapse on him, but you know what? It's a two-horse race, and for me, I would give the edge slightly to Cabrera based on that. His defense, no, it wasn't, you know, as off the charts, especially in the sabermetric categories. Definitely Trout had a huge edge over there in defense and base running. But everybody forgets, well, they don't always forget, but they tend to overlook it. I mean, Cabrera did move over to another position, and no, he wasn't a gold glove where he was playing over at third base. But I tell you what, he didn't ruin the team either. He was adequate enough at third base. He worked at the position very hard, and because he was able to do that, they were able to get other bats in at other positions. Those bats didn't always help the team, but you know what? It's a toss-up between the two, and I would give it to Cabrera based on what he did the final 2 months of the season. And I haven't always done that. I back when Ichiro won the MVP, I had a vote that year, and I gave Ichiro the MVP vote. I was working in Toronto at the time, and he narrowly defeated Jason Giambi, who had just had an outstanding, scorching September and helped the Oakland A's make the playoffs that year. And if I had to go back and do it over again, I might change my vote.
Interesting.
You know, and so I've evolved a bit over the years.
Well, good. And yeah. I wonder about that because I've seen you have debates in social media forums about the modern way of analyzing statistics and the sabermetrics. And what I find interesting about this, first of all, sorry to use a very Quebec word, but I'm going to. This feels like this MVP race is going to be a referendum on statistics.
Please don't use that word. I thought I'd gotten over that word 17 years ago, covering it for the Gazette, sitting in a bar in the east end of Montreal, but apparently not.
Oh, that sounds like a story you'll have to tell before
another time. My next trip.
Regardless, both sides do use stats to support their arguments. Why is it that one side, and it doesn't matter which side it is, but one side is so willing to tar and feather the other?
I think it's because there's been a lot of animosity that's changed changed hands over the last 10 years. I blame it all on Moneyball. I blame it all on Michael Lewis and the book Moneyball, not on the Moneyball revolution, but on the book. I think the book itself was such an antagonistic flashpoint in the whole debate. It had made a lot of great points, and believe me, I've read the book backwards and forwards. I'm actually in the afterword of the paperback version, not in a flattering way, but I actually enjoyed the book the first time I read it. That was a great book. And the problem is the language that was used in that book was so antagonistic and it was so inflammatory, and it didn't have to be. Basically, it said you're either doing this way or you're an idiot. And let's look at who the idiots are. Let's see. Kenny Williams won a World Series in 2005. His team's still up there. He's still employed, last I checked, going on, what is it now, 10-plus years. His franchise value's doubled during his tenure. You've got Brian Sabian, another idiot. Well, he just won his second World Series in 3 years. He's been to the World Series three times since 2002, which is three more times than Billy Beane. Now, I'm not putting down Billy Beane. I'm just saying. You know, he's doubled the franchise value of the San Francisco Giants, and he's still employed. After 15 years in baseball, you can't be an idiot and keep a general manager's job for 15 years and win two World Series and lose another. You just can't do it. And that book painted him as an idiot. It painted anybody who didn't follow what Lewis was prescribing as an idiot, and I think that got everybody's backs up. And now we see, I mean, the whole untold story of Moneyball is, you know, the fat scout, the so-called fat scout, the guy who got fired in the Moneyball movie, Grady Fuson. Nobody knows this, but he's been working with Billy Beane now for the last 2 years. The whole movie scene was made up. Anyway, the book antagonized one side. Now, the other side, of course, are the people that followed Bill James and who I've actually interviewed. One of the few people who's actually interviewed him on the air in a condo in spring training on my live web stream show two years ago. Yeah. Bill James, great guy. But, you know, Bill James, people who grew up reading his stuff, which includes a wide spectrum of baseball people. It's not just people who are devoted to sabermetrics. There's people all over the map who would be considered old school who have read his stuff. But anyway, those people, the people who are into sabermetrics, who spend their lives devoted to analyzing stuff statistically, scientifically, as scientific as you can get in the sporting world, those people feel very insulted when people refer to them as nerds, which they do all the time. And they when they refer to them as geeks, and when they say, yeah, you're just the water boys, you couldn't make the football team, and that kind of stuff. And there's that natural, very natural antagonistic view that they take towards the other side. And that I completely understand, because I wouldn't want to be like that. And now, finally, they're getting some validation for some of the stats that they've been following their entire lives. And people are doing it in modern front offices. I mean, to say that there's no statistics being used in today's baseball would be foolish. Of course it's being used. Is it being used to the extent that people portray it as? No. But it's also being used to an extent far greater than just a nominal exercise. I mean, all the defensive positioning that you see now is a result of sabermetric study. They use stuff that's done by John Duan, another guy I've met and interviewed, Baseball Info Solutions, a great guy. Really good work, sells his information. He invented the defensive run save metric and the Fielding Bible Awards. That's his book, Fielding Bible. I mean, people use his stuff to position teams defensively and more now in the majors. So, yeah, stats have a big role. And, you know, I just that's why I get my guard up when I hear stuff, and I'm not blaming you for this, but when I hear this is going to be a referendum or this is going to be a class war between this, you know what, we got to move on from that. Moneyball was 10 years ago. That's the kind of language that was in Moneyball, and it's time for it to stop. You know, it's time to just for both sides to learn to live with each other. I'm not going to give the Rodney King speech here, but, you know, let's move on to more important things. Seriously. I mean, I'm over it. I'm over it. Now, that said, I won't accept every sabermetric stat out there as gospel. I have a lot of problems with Fangraphs War and the people who use it for every little determination of a baseball player's value, because it's compromised by the defensive metric, which is ultimate zone rating. Nobody knows how accurate ultimate zone rating is over a single season. So you can't use Fangraphs War to say this player is this much more valuable than this player in any given season. That's my sabermetric lecture for the day. And in the old school way, I'll tell you what, there's a reason people have done things for 100 years in baseball. It's not only because they're old and tired and lazy. It's because a lot of these things work. And character, personality, all these things play into baseball. And chemistry, human relations, just like in your workplace, if you don't get along with the person next to you, it's going to be a really lousy workplace. You might win a few awards, but it's not going to be a happy work environment.
Not at the cost of stepping on people's throats.
Yeah, no, and so
right?
It's just these things. We gotta get away from this. Each side is throwing rocks at each other because it's been going on too long. Look, you're not all nerds, and look, you're not all great jocks. Most of you weren't great jocks when you were younger. You got to accept it. You know, move on. Most of your jockdom has grown tenfold in terms of ability since you retired from playing sports. So just get over it and learn to deal with other people.
A couple of minutes left with Jeff Baker, Seattle Times. Jeff is the beat writer for the Seattle Mariners. And three separate times this season, I was very eager to look at Jeff Baker's Twitter feed. That was, of course, during the two perfect games and one no-hitter that the Mariners were a part of this season. Jeff is the most jinxed baseball writer I've ever met.
Well, I covered the Blue Jays for 9 seasons, and they went nowhere, and I've covered the Mariners. So, yeah, I am Jinx, and I grew up in Montreal.
That's right. But there's something, you know, as a baseball fan, as I'm a hardcore baseball fan, and my dream was always to see a no-hitter. I came close once with Fassero. I remember talking about it with you back, I think, when you were here last year. You have to figure that you go to – you what went to 140 of the 162 games this year?
Probably about that many, yeah.
You must want to kick yourself.
You know what? The closest I came was here in Montreal. I went with a colleague of mine, Lisa Fitterman, at the Gazette. She used to work. I don't know. She might. I don't think she still works there. But
the name doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm an old guy. So we went back in 1990. I want to say 4. And Pedro was pitching up. A perfect game. One out in the 8th inning, and he drills Reggie Sanders. And Sanders charges the mound of all because, you know, brilliant. And he starts a brawl. But somehow Pedro stays in the game. Takes the no hitter into the 9th. One out in the 9th. Gives it up, and that was it. And the closest since then I came Japan this year, not the season opener for the Mariners, which I covered, but I was at the season opener for the Japanese League 2 days later, and their pitcher took a no-hitter into the 9th, and there was one out in the 9th, and he gave it up.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but then the guy I was there to cover, who was a closer from Seattle, he actually came in and got to close the game, and I was sitting with his wife, and Lasting's Millage's
sure.
girlfriend was there sitting with him. We didn't think he was even going to get anywhere near the field that day because the guy's throwing a no-hitter, but they brought him in right after he gave up the no-hitter. And so I got to cover him and actually see him in action, which was great. But, yeah, I'll tell you what we do. We come off the road. We do long road trips in the majors, and we come off the road, and they usually give us the first day off after we come off, at least the first day off. If it's coming into a weekend, they'll give us the entire weekend off. And so one of those no-hitters was the combined no-hitter the Mariners threw against the Dodgers.
Right.
And it was on the Friday night after a long road trip, so I had that night off. Of course, they threw a no-hitter. That makes sense. The other one was the perfect game that was thrown against them by some nobody, Phil Umber, I think it was.
It was.
Yeah, sorry, Phil. But, yeah, he's going to throw a perfect game. Sure, we all knew that. You know what? We were embarking on a long road trip pretty soon after that, and I had to travel on the Sunday, and I believe this was the Saturday. So they gave me the Saturday off to spend at home because when you're in Seattle, it takes all day to travel wherever we had to go. I think we were going to the East Coast. So I was, you know, I was working Sunday, Monday. So Saturday I have off, of course. Don't get to see the perfect game. But the last one, the Felix Hernandez one, this
That's
is the worst.
Hurt, yeah.
I was covering that entire homestand. I think I was working like 15 out of 16 days, and the one day I had off was that day. And so what do? I go to wine country in Washington to pick up a shipment that my wife and I had waiting for us at one of the wineries. And it'd been waiting there forever, and I had to go get it. So I go to get it, and I say, all right, well, I'm here. I might as well have a glass or two of wine. I'm sitting in one of them having a glass or two. That's it, of wine, on my off day, beautiful sunshine. I'm looking at my iPhone, following the game, and it's like, okay, 5th inning, this isn't good, because it's the Rays, and they can't hit their way out of a paper bag, and
right.
I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. And at one point, I think it was the bottom of the 6th, there was like 2 outs, and top of the 6th, 2 outs, and I'm thinking, do I have time to race back across the bridge? And we're almost in rush hour traffic now, and I'm thinking, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get stuck in this traffic jam for 2 hours, and he's going to give up like a dribbler in the 8th inning, and that's going to be it. I'm going to be sitting there looking idiot in traffic. So I said, I'm going to take a chance on this one. And, of course, you know, Felix Hernandez throws the perfect game, highlight of the season, probably highlight of the decade for the Seattle Mariners, and yours truly got to tweet about it when it happened.
I'm so sorry, Jeff.
It was tough, and
I
believe me, I've heard about it ever since.
I'm so sorry, and I guess the only solace you can take is that the Mariners had a good second half. They're holding on to King Felix. You never know for next year.
Well, you know for next year. You know that if they don't go out and get somebody this winter, it's going to be a long season next year. But, I mean, look, they should be a little bit better than last year. They're moving the fences into. That'll help because they have the worst offense of the last 10 years in baseball. So it's going to help by osmosis. So they need that. They need a little bit of improvement from some of their hitters, and they need to go out and get a couple of bats, spend a little money this winter. And they say that they're going to do it. So if they do that, yeah, they could finish third. Next year.
That would be an improvement.
It would be an improvement over 4th, yes.
Jeff Baker, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to seeing you next time you're in town.
Great to be in.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, hop! Yeah.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. Coming in on a little Springsteen live, London Hammersmith Odeon 75. One day I will hear this song in concert, Mr. Farrar.
You haven't heard this in concert yet?
No, I have.
How is that even possible?
I think this song was retired a while ago.
I see.
It's a cover, actually. It's Gary U.S. Bonds is the original artist.
Right.
It's called Quarter to Three. It's from 1961. The original version is great, but doesn't have that.
Uh-huh.
Let's bring on a fellow Springsteen fan. His name is Max Kerman. He was on last week talking ball with us and did such a good job that we're bringing him back. He has passed the audition. And tonight was at the Bulls-Celtics game in Chicago. Welcome back to the program, Max.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, no, I'm having a great time in Chicago.
I bet. It's a hell of a town.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty cold, though. The last time I talked to you a week ago in Texas, and it was beautiful and warm. And here it's probably, I don't know, -5, and it's, like, super windy. So I'm just getting reacquainted with winter right now.
Oh, well, I'd say poor you, but, you know, frankly, I'm sure in a month or in a week you'll be back somewhere sunny, right?
No, you know, we're up north for good, you know? I don't know. Next time I'm going to see the sun. So, you know, unless you want to plan a vacation with me, Dave,
we're
stuck.
In due time. I know I might plan a vacation to go see you play somewhere, but that's you're not on vacation, then I am.
Yeah, that's true.
So, how was the game tonight, first of all?
It was great. You know, it was my first time ever being at the United Center. And, you know, there's a lot of history there. I think it opened in 96 or 97. And, yeah, you know, Chicago is a real basketball town. And you could really tell it. You know, they've been accustomed to being around winning teams. And you could, you know, just a sense you get from the crowd in the way they react to calls and the way they react to certain plays was really, you know, interesting, because I think, you know, I've been to a lot of games at the Air Canada Center in Toronto with the Raptors, and I don't want to, you know, stereotype, but I think, you know, there was definitely a sense that this town has been around great basketball for a long time and is really aware of, like, observing a game, which was a really great experience.
I think it's the difference, you know, that only time will allow, and frankly, having Michael Jordan play on your team doesn't hurt either. But, you know, Toronto still hasn't, they're still a new franchise, all things considered.
No, it's not a bad thing, because I think Toronto has amazing fans, and I think there's a really great thing that they have going with the basketball community in Toronto. If you were to compare going to a Montreal Canadiens game versus going to a Nashville Predators game, you know, there's just a history there with the sport that is just a result of time and tradition and all the things that are great about sports, you know, in terms of, you know, falling in love with the team or a sport. So I think, you know, being able to see a basketball game in Chicago was a really great example of a city that sort of attached itself to the game.
We're in conversation with Kaufman Show basketball analyst Max Kerman. You can follow him on Twitter at either Max_Kerman or Arkell's Music. Jay Farrar.
Max, when last we spoke, you seemed to express a small glimmer of hope for the Toronto Raptors. At 1-6 now, has that all but gone down the crapper, as they say?
So eloquent, my co-host.
Yeah, listen, I couldn't put it any better than that. I mean, I'm not going to be so delicate with that kind of a record,
right.
Yeah, with a 1-6 record. So what do you think about that, Max?
Well, okay, well, there's two things. The first thing is, if you listen to the transcript, it's actually, I didn't say I had much hope. I said my friends who are Raptors obsessed, you know, seem to have a lot of hopes for the team. So the fact that they're 1-6 doesn't surprise me too much. It probably makes my friends back home pretty sad. With that said, it is still very early, and I know there's a lot of people that are excited about the New York Knicks playing really well, and there's a lot of people that are disappointed and bewildered at the Lakers, you know, off to a terrible start. With that all said, you know, let's have this same conversation in February.
We'll check the transcripts, Mr. Obama. Okay, we'll make sure that we get it right next time.
Yeah. What did I say? What did I say?
You're supposed to say, "Please continue, Governor," as I'm talking, just to dig myself into a hole a little bit more.
Candy Crowley isn't here though.
Yeah, she's not here for that.
Yeah.
Eric Thomas doesn't give a damn, so.
Can I just say that I'm loving this conversation and where it went right now? Max, the biggest, I think, piece of news in the NBA right now is what's going on with L.A., and a lot of people think that Phil Jackson kind of got screwed. I'd love to get your opinion on it. Nash and D'Antoni reunited, and a lot of people are also saying this could be the start of a new Showtime era in L.A.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Phil Jackson got screwed. From what I've read, it sounds like Phil Jackson wanted a lot. He didn't want to travel with the team. He wanted, you know, full control over all basketball decisions. And, you know, it's hard to get a grasp on what it would be like to run an organization like the L.A. Lakers and to give up that control to a head coach. So, I mean, with that said, Phil Jackson has a track record that would almost demand that kind of treatment. But, you know, I think as a basketball fan, I'm really excited to see D'Antoni take over the team. I think he and Steve Nash have such a unique history together, and their success is sort of reliant on each other. So, you know, I'm very excited to see where this goes. And, you know, again, let's talk in February because, you know, with these teams that have just come together really within, you know, a month of before the regular season starts, it's very, you know, it's very hard to get acclimatized to a new set of players, a new coach. And I think it's going to take a couple weeks or a couple months even for the Lakers to get adjusted to each other. In the same way that it took the Miami Heat, you know, almost two seasons to really figure out how to do it. Because the first season, you know, they were still figuring things out.
Max Kerman is the Kauffman Show basketball analyst. Max, hopefully we can speak with you next week. Do you have a show on Monday night?
You know what? I don't think we do. I think we'll probably be, where will we be? We'll be, you know what? We're going to be in Washington, D.C., I think, on the day off. So I'll be around. I'd love to talk to you again.
We're going to have to tell Dave Zirin, Edge of Sports, to go to your concert then.
Please. I'd love to have
him. Max, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week.
Good to talk to you.
Have a great one. Back. It is the Kauffman Show, and we're what the hell, I'll say it. I've been thinking of Ted Teeven lately, so we are running out of racetrack here on TSN Radio 690. You want to get those calls in? Get them in. 514-790-1690, 1-866-896-2546. Mr. Farrar?
Mr. Kauffman?
Feeling all right?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
All right. Good. Nice easing out of a very busy show tonight.
Yes.
Lots of guests.
Lots of great guests.
Yeah, it was a really fun one tonight.
Good conversation.
That's what we aim for.
That's what radio is for. Good conversation.
Occasionally. It's good company.
Yeah, it is good company.
Radio is good company.
I often fall asleep listening to Ted Teeven at night and whomever else.
I used to fall asleep with the radio under my pillow on AM 600.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to AM 600, by the way. They will be a new news talk station in our city starting soon.
Oh, really?
Not that soon, but soon enough that I can mention it now and nothing will come back to bite me in the ass later. Yeah, that was announced.
English?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. To go up against Blee 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 Blee.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Sorry, CJ Blank D. That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah, just so in case you were confused. But you know what's really awesome? We're still here.
Yeah.
We're still here.
We're still here. We'll be here for a while.
We will.
I'm not going anywhere.
Cross your fingers and write your congressman. because we want to be here even more.
Yes. Yes.
And if you don't want to write your congressman, write your member of parliament. Tell them about the Kaufman Show. Frankly, we'd probably like to have that MP on and grill them. Let's go back to the phones. 514-790-1690, 1-866-896-2546. Wrapping it up here on the Kaufman Show on another Monday night, and we've got Mike in St. Leonard. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a great week. What could I tell you?
I know. It really has, hasn't it?
Nothing in particular to say. All I can say is this was a great election. I think years from now we'll look back on it, and it'll be even get greater significance based on what they kind of threw at him over the last 4 years. And like Dave Zirin said, to see Karl Rove up there shuffling papers like a lunatic, it was embarrassing. I mean, he's like, we can still win it. I was like, you know.
It's still good. It's still good. It's just a little airborne. It's just
how
a little airborne.
How delusional can you be? I mean, like, when does the delusion end?
But it's the same delusion that the left had in 2004 when Kerry lost, because it was this, like, oh, my God, how do people not think the same way I think? I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And numbers be damned. It's that people like to think that everybody else has the same frame of mind as them.
This is true. And it's taken a while, I guess, just like the demographics have turned the Democrats way now. It's interesting. I saw something on Twitter today that actually a writer, I think from the New York Times or New York Post, who said that within 10 or 20 years, the way the numbers are looking, even in a state like Texas, will be going Democrat, perhaps in three election cycles.
Wow.
And if you look at the percentages, it was actually pretty close. I was actually surprised in some of the states where Obama didn't pick up how many people actually still voted for him in a state that's considered quite conservative, like Texas, where you'd never dream of going Democrat. Since, what, Lyndon B. Johnson, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And so it is what it is. I don't think it has...
Ann Richards was a Democrat, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
So they have a, what do they call it, a Texocrat, don't they?
Yeah. It's almost like a Republican from Massachusetts trying to win, you know?
Oh, no, that's not it. It's a Dixiecrat.
A Dixiecrat.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, but you know what? The most shocking thing in that election was the fact that he didn't need Ohio, Florida, or Virginia, and he still would have won.
I know.
And to me, that's the humility I haven't seen on the Republican side yet. That, to me, is the most sobering thing, is that the way they were talking it up, the voter suppression, at the end, three of the biggest swing states he didn't need, and he still could have beat you. And, you know, they're not taking it well.
No, but again, we'll go back to 2004 when the Democrats didn't take it well either, and I'm pretty sure that the liberals still aren't taking the election of two elections ago well either.
Well, it's, you know what, Dave, that's the whole thing about the trend. You know,
it's never easy to lose, Mike.
Yeah, but you know what? The Democrats have won the popular vote the last five out of the last six elections.
Yeah.
So you can't say it's a center-right country anymore. You can't say that the Republicans are on an upswing.
True.
You can't say that a reflection will help them. I mean, in 2000, if you just look at the popular vote, they would have lost that. And they probably did if you look at the count. If one day, you know, someone sends you those ballots to your house and you count them, I'm sure it'll come up with Al Gore winning. But, you know, it's it's over. But the fact is that the trend hasn't been in their favor for a long time, and their views are kind of outdated.
Kinda?
It's kind of hard.
They're outdated, and they're about to become obsolete.
Exactly.
The reason why the right still has a chance right now is because of the parties are basically made up of these white, well-to-do, rich people.
Right.
The brown people who have just come to this country are still driving cabs, working in kitchens, and eventually they will move their way up the chain and start becoming in better positions of leadership and in the government. And it's inevitable. It's going the same way as blue eyes and blonde hair. In 100 years, you're not going to see it anymore.
You'll have to go to see the boys from Brazil.
And
that,
I'm a
right?
prime example of it. My father has blue eyes and blonde hair. My mother has the dominant gene, and being a woman from Greece, and she has a much darker complexion, so none of her three kids have blue eyes and blonde hair. And politics are going the same way. As this part of the world gets browner, well, they'll move further to the left. You know what? You might even see an emergence of a far-left party that will go up against the Democrats.
Yeah, they're called Quebec Solidaire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, any thoughts on the inaction in the NHL this weekend? I know on Friday it seemed to be, I think it was Friday, where the NHL accused Donald Fehr of not transmitting all details of the deals to the players, essentially throwing him under the bus, which just seemed like such a misdirection move by me.
Yeah, it is a misdirection, but, you know, Ferris, he's tough, boy. I mean, he's not going to crack. And so, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to do something like that, but I don't, even now, you know, Bettman, I don't think he knows who he's against. I mean, this guy is just going to stand there, and he's just going to wait it out. Even if the players are going to be on food stamps in 2 years, he'll be like, I don't care. We're not signing a deal until I get what I want. That's kind of the impression that I'm getting. And so, to me, it doesn't really look good. And like I heard someone mention, I think it was another caller on your station earlier, said the PR battle is just nonsense now. At some point, these guys have got to sit down and get a deal done. And
yeah, there's no more PR. Yeah. There is no more PR at this point.
Well, the players are still doing a great job.
The only PR is pissed right off. That's the only PR there is right now.
Hey, well done.
Yeah. True.
You know, but when PK Subban does the weather on CTV, that's good PR.
Yeah.
And when there's a puff piece about X amount of Habs going to dinner with Stubbs and somebody who wins the contest, that's great PR.
That is true.
These are all things. A lot of these guys, instead of going to Europe, have actually, you know, kept their faces in the public eye in this town.
I must say one thing about PK before I let you guys go.
Yeah.
I've seen him on The Sour Has 22 Minutes. I've seen him now on the local news. This guy has done more public appearances in terms of on TV and radio and whatnot, and outreach with the Hyundai thing for getting kids equipment.
Another great, great PR move.
I mean, he has done more in his short time in the NHL than I've seen almost any player, maybe even more than Sidney Crosby. I mean, he should be if he's not the face of the NHL, I don't know who is.
Well, back to our conversation from before about the changing face of America, right?
Well, that's it. Unfortunately, he's not under contract, though. So I don't know what's going to happen when...
Four more years. Mike, thanks so much for the call.
Have a good guy. Good night, guys.
Catch you soon.
Okay, bye.
You know, Jay, I don't care anymore. I wish I could get all fire and brimstone like I was a couple of weeks ago, but it almost
seems
laughable.
I have a bad taste in my mouth.
Would you like some water?
Eh? No. Well, no, not the usual bad one. That's
okay.
This is a
metaphorical one.
This is a metaphorical one.
Gotcha.
And I don't miss hockey a damn bit.
It's,
you know,
weird,
that?
Eh?
I don't.
No, me neither.
I don't. And every time I see hockey highlights, I get that bad taste in my mouth again. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about those guys. Yeah.
It's weird.
Keep it
how,
going. And you know what the amazing part is?
Yeah. I feel bad for the guys. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. And every day at the pub, people always ask me, because they think I'm some sort of sports expert, which I am far from. They always ask me, they say, well, when are we getting hockey back? When are we getting hockey back? And I try to provide some kind of insight based purely on my own instinct. That's the only way I can do it.
Right. Well, it's not like you're
I have absolutely no information to go on whatsoever. But on my instinct, the first time I thought, oh, okay. There was one point where they were in serious discussions again, and they seemed to be cooped up in the little debriefing communist war room center, and they're all doing their thing and everything. And I thought, you know what? I think we're going to get hockey. But little did I know.
Man, if it was communist, it would have been fixed months ago.
Months ago. What I didn't know, little did I know, is how stupid they really were. So normally I would have gotten that same feeling now, as it seems like talks have come to become a little bit more intense in the last 2 weeks. But you know what? They're just stupid enough that they might screw it up again.
Oh, it seems like
it's clear.
It's almost like they're preparing the public for this not to work.
Yeah.
What's the next step? Is it scabs? Are the players going to try?
No, they're going to cancel the season.
Well, of course, but next year.
Well, if they don't get it done by next year, then you just take the whole NHL and throw it out. Throw it out. Throw the whole thing out.
But
it never existed.
So we're willing to sacrifice this season in the knowledge that they're playing next year. That seems like a real dicey game to me, Jay.
It seems they're just stupid enough to do something like that. You know, they clearly don't care what you and I think.
No.
They don't care what the common fan. They don't care what the casual fan. They don't care about anybody but themselves. It's so clear. And you know what? It's annoying.
They'll come back, and then 7 years later, they'll do it all over again.
You won't have my presence in one of your arenas. I guarantee that. Not for the next year. I will abstain.
Well, we decided between the callers and you and Jimmy and everybody else a couple of weeks ago, I need to hold on to my season's tickets. But that first game, those tickets stay in the book.
There you go.
Maybe maybe we'll donate the second game to charity.
Maybe donate the tickets to some waiter or waitress who hasn't been able to get any shifts this year because there's been no hockey, because the restaurants and the pubs are not full with the people providing industry and business to the surrounding area. Maybe give it to one of the truck drivers who hasn't been able to bring any of the equipment from arena to arena, helping out the NHL or anybody else. You know, maybe give it to one of them because they're not able to afford it for their kids. How about that? And then bring them there and put up a big sign while you're at it.
We're going to give a little tease on it now because, frankly, we had a very busy show and we didn't get to it earlier. But the fine people at Sherwood Hockey have given us one of their Mo sticks, which is a Movember stick.
Yes. Excellent.
To give away. It's a Paul Stastny model. And we'll get a picture up online. And basically what we're going to ask you guys to do is put up your best Movember picture on the Kaufman Show Facebook page. And this contest will run from now until the end of the month. If you think that the mustache will be bolder and bushier by the end of November, then by all means, wait till then. We'll decide till the end. Girls, if you want to, you know, you are just as entitled to a hockey stick as the boys are. So,
if you have the ability, go ahead.
Let's say you can do a fake mustache if you're a girl.
Yeah, or something innovative or whatever.
Or something different, something to catch our eye. But do head over to the Kaufman Show page on Facebook. Click like. Jay will thank you for it. I might thank you for it as
sure.
well.
Sure. Hey, if it's anywhere near Jay Onright's mustache,
my goodness,
know,
I think
you're
I,
a winner, my
I just
friend.
Looked to my right at the television and
yeah.
jumped out of my
It's
skin.
Funny when you were talking about it, it appeared on the TV in SportsCenter. It's like, oh my God.
Well, we had a great show tonight.
Yes, we did.
It was a lot of fun. And I want to thank all of our guests. Steve Berthume, who you can follow on Twitter at BertDBax. He is the new play-by-play man for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Dave Zirin at Edge of Sports. Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. You can follow him at G. Baker Mariners. Our NBA analyst, Max Kerman. Follow him at Max_Kerman. And please do buy both Arkell's albums, either at a record store, which still exists. I was in one this week, or on iTunes. And finally, Thursday night, November 15th, Hip Hop Karaoke. Thank you to Olivia Benaroche for doing a little Miss Jackson in studio. That was fun. Mr. F, it's been a pleasure.
Mr. K, always.
Listen up, kid. It's not what you think. Stayed out too late. Had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. But you hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. Thank you. face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere du Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?